is Tuesday, November 30th, 20th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, there may be a resolution in sight to the ongoing war in Yemen, where thousands are on the brink of starvation.
When you see these pictures from outside, it's really heartbreaking.
Pakistan's president lashes out at President Trump for his comments about the country's terrorism. Democrats are suing to try to block the president's pick to be an acting attorney general. Also ahead, a movie that some critics say could be one to beat in the award season. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, amid international uproar over the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, three sources close to the Saudi royal court say some members of Saudi Arabia's ruling family are looking to prevent Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman from becoming king. Dozens of princes and cousins from powerful branches of the Al Saud family want to see a change in the line of succession, but sources say they would not act while King Salman, the Crown Prince's 82-year-old father, is still alive, recognizing the king is unlikely to turn against his favorite son, known in the West as MBS. Several U.S. senators, including Rand Paul, are calling for the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency to publicly issue its report that it recently, recent report saying that it believes the Crown Prince personally ordered the murder of Khashoggi. President Trump says he believes it's premature.
I think the evidence is overwhelming that the Crown Prince was involved. And so, no, I don't think we can sweep this under the rug.
That's Senator Rand Paul. But the real story in that region is the unfolding humanitarian crisis in Yemen. Efforts to end its devastating war picked up pace Monday as the government and rebels edged closer to peace talks as Britain led a push at the UN Security Council for an immediate truce. The moves came ahead of a visit in the next few days to the Arabian Peninsula country by the UN envoy, once again trying to get all sides around the negotiating table. A text of the draft UN resolution circulated by Britain to the 14 other council members sets a two-week deadline for the warring sides to remove all barriers to humanitarian aid. It would significantly ratchet up pressure on the Saudi-led coalition and the Iran-linked Houthi rebels to seek a negotiated settlement in Yemen, where millions are on the brink of starvation. VOA's Victor Beatty asks Alam Payand, chair of the Middle East Studies at Ohio State University, why, after all this death and destruction, are the parties seeming to be willing now to call a truce?
I think this is an international condemnation of the Saudi coalition on the one side and Iran's interference on the other side, because Iran sees and the coalition of Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and some other Gulf countries are attacking, and literally probably about over 10,000 people have been killed, and the whole Houthis are facing some sort of starvation, mass starvation. So there is an international condemnation for both sides, the Saudi-led coalition and also the Iran-linked rebel groups. And also that has been proven now that there is no military solution to these kinds of conflicts. It can go on for years. And both of them have come to the senses that there should be some sort of diplomatic solution.
What sort of diplomatic accommodation can these two bitter rivals make after 4 years of conflict? Will it be just set in place where they are standing right now, or can they actually bridge some sort of difference?
I think what happened, there is this fatigue. People get tired after some time. It happens in many other insurgencies, or the rebels have come to some sort of solution. In Cambodia, we saw that happened. In Vietnam, we saw that. And when there is no military solution, some sort of maybe a crude deal will be struck. Somehow, they're counting on this. There will be no democracy, no ballots and voting for parties and things like that. There will be some sort of ceasing of hostilities. And they are expecting that the international community will help. And at least the bombs will not be raining on the people and they will not die in the streets. When you see these pictures from outside, it's really heartbreaking.
What about two external factors? What part did they play? A, the Jamal Khashoggi murder at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and B, the U.S. sanctions reimposed on Iran. Have those two events had any impact?
Yes, there is, because Saudi Arabia is not only condemned for its bombarding of the Hudaydah and other areas close to Sana'a, which is under the control of the rebels, and also this Adnan Khashoggi's death, or murder, I should say, in Istanbul. So Saudi Arabia got a really a black eye, not only from the Western democracies in the United States, but it has been condemned all over the world. Even in the Arab world, they are very embarrassed by what happened. This kind of murder of someone in the cold blood. Saudi Arabia is getting all kind of condemnation from different. Maybe some of them are a little bit quieter. Saudi Arabia knows that. So even though the monarch is about 82 years old, and he is behind his son and he supports him. His father, this King Salman, went to this Shura Council, which is the consultation body in Saudi Arabia, and he mentioned about the economic development, what his son is doing, finding jobs for the, he did not mention anything about Khashoggi's death. Only he mentioned that our Justice Department is following the Islamic laws and the justice will prevail and that sort of thing. There was no mention of his son's involvement.
The Crown Prince apparently is going to attend the G20 summit scheduled later this month.
In Argentina, yeah. We don't know that how these international leaders will react to Mohammed bin Salman, because on the one hand, this Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who says that, well, this the murder of Khashoggi was ordered from the higher places of the Saudi government. So we will see that what will happen. Saudi Arabia may be expecting that something will happen. People will not show that kind of very strong resistance or strong condemnation of Mohammed bin Salman. But we do not know how it will go. The important thing is that in the United States, the president of the United States almost is not accepting what the CIA in the United States is reporting on, that the involvement of Mohammed bin Salman in the murder of Khashoggi. So as long as the president of the United States is not condemning that in very harsh words, maybe Saudi Arabia is expecting that other countries will follow what president of the United States is doing. The condemnation will probably somehow, it will not be as strong as it is right now by the international community.
That's Salam Payen, Chair of Middle East Studies at Ohio State University. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Russia brings new charges against a Kremlin critic. The rift widens between Trump and former U.S. intelligence bosses. Saudi Arabia Houthi rebels are planning to support for UN peace efforts. And a new U.S. report finds far-right extremism on the rise. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan sharply criticized President Donald Trump Monday for questioning Pakistan's anti-terror efforts. He said Washington is making Islamabad a scapegoat for U.S. failures in Afghanistan. In an interview that aired Sunday on the U.S. network Fox News, Trump defended his decision to withhold hundreds of millions of dollars in military aid to Pakistan, saying the country doesn't do a damn thing for us. Reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad tells International Edition Sarah Williams Khan's reaction to the Trump comments about Pakistan.
Obviously, it is once again reflecting the state of affairs between the two countries. As you know, the relationship has really worsened over the last 1 year. And, you know, since President Trump suspended assistance, military assistance to Pakistan earlier this year, both sides have been exchanging critical statements, allegations, and counter-allegations. And that's what we witnessed yesterday from President Trump, that, you know, he came out once again and, you know, accused Pakistan of not doing enough to counter terrorism in the region, particularly in Afghanistan. And that's what really, it appears, angered Imran Khan, the prime minister of this country. And he just took to the Twitter. And in a series of tweets, he just defended his country's record, saying that, you know, Pakistanis have suffered more than 75,000 casualties and more than $123 billion in economic losses. And, you know, he went on to, in fact, allege that it's the U.S. military failures in Afghanistan that have prompted Washington to find a scapegoat, and Pakistan is being made a scapegoat as a result of the U.S. failure. So, As I said in the beginning, that this is the kind of situation that prevails between the two countries, that the relationship is continuously on the downslide, although both sides have been engaged in order to improve the situation. But these statements from President Trump and today Imran Khan's reaction clearly indicate that the two countries are far from really improving the bilateral relationship.
However, the U.S. and NATO are relying on Pakistani land and air routes for sending supplies to their own troops that are in Afghanistan.
Yeah, that is actually why most analysts believe that these statements from President Trump and, you know, from the Pakistani side are merely politically motivated, because the United States and NATO, they heavily rely on these land and air routes, according to Pakistani officials. Since 2001, more than NATO and U.S. together have conducted more than 2 million sorties, air operations over Pakistani airspace, and more than 150,000 containers have crossed through Pakistan, ferrying key supplies to the troops in Afghanistan. And, you know, Afghanistan is a landlocked country, and currently that's the only reliable route that NATO and U.S. forces are really dependent upon, because with the relationship in the relationship between the U.S. and Iran is already has plunged to new lows, and there is the same is the condition with Russia. So any reliance on the northern route that brings to bring supplies into Afghanistan, which is comparatively a very long route, is out of question at the moment. So again, it's the Pakistani land and air routes that NATO will continuously need to sustain the military operation led by the United States in Afghanistan. So it is expected, you know, many analysts believe that while the two sides are engaged in these political rhetoric, on the ground and practically, the military cooperation between the two sides is very much intact. And, a complete breakdown in the relationship is, many believe, out of question.
Is it known at this time, are there any plans for these two leaders to meet, for Khan and Trump to meet?
Well, it is in the foreseeable future, there's not going to be any such possibility unless and until the relationship is restored, particularly the military aid and military cooperation in terms of training Pakistani officers in U.S. military institutes remains suspended. So unless and until that is restored, unless and until, you know, there is some a political engagement at the highest level, it's very unlikely that there could be a meeting at such a high and such at the highest level between the two countries.
That's reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad. The official death toll in the deadliest wildfire on record in the U.S. continues to rise, according to authorities. And while the town of Paradise is almost completely gone, a small group of residents who survived is defying evacuation orders and living in the burn zone. AP correspondent Julie Walker has that.
The town of Paradise was basically wiped off the map by the wildfire, but Brad Weldon and his 89-year-old blind mother's caregiver saved his house with a garden hose and buckets. Now they face no power, water, gas, or other supplies. Over the weekend, Butte County Sheriff Corey Honey said he understands why people do what they do, but it gets dangerous.
As a general rule, what we would encourage people to do is to evacuate to a place where they have what they need to survive.
Weldon says he's staying put because he didn't think there was anywhere safe he could take his ailing mother, especially now that the norovirus has broken out in some shelters. I'm Julie Walker.
Meanwhile, officials have also determined Sunday that nearly 300 more people are safe, but more than a week after the campfire began, about 900 people are still unaccounted for as search crews go through the remains of burned buildings and others to try to contact those reported missing by friends and family. Edith Hall, who grew up in Paradise, says she recognizes many of the names on the list of those missing, which makes it very emotional.
Some older people that might be, you know, teachers that I used to have growing up. I'm worried about a lot of them and a lot of my friends.
The National Red Cross is sheltering thousands of people who've lost their homes and assisting with those trying to find missing loved ones. Jay Lawrence is a national spokesman for the Red Cross.
The way we're helping match family members with their loved ones is there's a Safe and Well website that we have. What you can do is go to safeandwell.org and you can register yourself as safe, or you can search among those who have registered yourself as safe. We've had 1,500 matches so far. That's 1,500 people who have found their loved ones just through this program. And there have been 73,000 searches. So the other way that we're helping is every day people walk into our shelters looking for their loved ones. And if you go into the shelters, you can see where they've posted notices. When you go into a shelter, you can also register on paper with Safe and Well. So right now, we're taking care of hundreds of people in Northern California in our shelters. We're feeding them meals. We're offering them comfort. Sometimes that's the most important thing. But the next big thing that's going to happen, and we don't know when it's going to be, is when the people of Paradise are allowed back. And what's important to us is they should know that when they come back, the Red Cross will be there. The Red Cross will be there providing mental health counseling, because this is so depressing. I was talking to a nurse in one of our shelters today, and some people are suicidal, she said.
Oh, my.
It's that bad. And so that's just one important thing we'll be doing. We'll be providing them a hot meal as they try to clean up and salvage what they can with our emergency response vehicles driving through the neighborhoods. We'll be providing special wildfire relief kits. Wildfires are different from hurricanes. These are special kits that include a rake and a shovel. They include a mask. Masks are very important. They include gloves and bags and all kinds of other things. Eye drops are very important because, you know, you can still see smoke in the air. And then we'll be, again, sometimes the most important thing is to have someone to listen to your story, to listen through, listen to what you're going through, to listen to what you're going through as you return to the town that was beloved to you.
Now, I know there are about 1,200 people in Red Cross shelters across California. How difficult is it to go from someone who had a home of their own to be living with all these people in this open space? I would imagine that in itself would be a difficult thing.
Of course, it's difficult. But what we're trying to do is to make it as comfortable as possible as we can. I mean, we feed them three hot meals a day. They have showers. They have health services. A lot of them have lost their prescription medicine, so we try to replace that. Their eyeglasses, we try to replace that. And what's so fantastic, what's so wonderful, is the compassion of Red Cross volunteers. You see it every day. This is a terrible thing that happened, and people should know the Red Cross is going to be there with them.
Are you planning on opening more shelters or taking in more people? Are they still continuing to show up? What's the status of that?
We have plenty of room in our shelters for more people. We've seen the numbers fluctuate a little bit from day to day. As you said, there were about 1,200 across the state in Red Cross and community centers. So we want people to know that they can come to a shelter, that they can find a safe place, that they can find a place where they can be fed and where they can be taken good care of.
So what are you doing in Paradise today as far as, because I know the shelters aren't in Paradise, they're outside
That's
of Paradise.
That's exactly right. That's right. The people of Paradise haven't been let in. I'm traveling along with a contingent of other people, of other Red Crossers. We're being escorted by CAL FIRE. And you can't really help people the best unless you have a sense of what they went through and what they're about to face when they come back to Paradise.
The fire itself is still burning as thousands of firefighters work to bring it under control. U.S. President Donald Trump has said he would not intervene if his acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker, decides to curtail a special counsel investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Democrats in Congress are determined to keep Robert Mueller's probe on track as long as necessary to determine if there was any collusion between Trump's election campaign and Russia to help him win the presidency. But that will be easier starting in January when a new Democratic dominated Congress is sworn in. VOA's Latika Hoke reports the president is likely to meet with the opposition if he decides to appoint Matthew Whitaker to a permanent position.
President Trump has repeatedly called for the end of the probe that he calls a witch hunt. Following the midterm elections, he promptly fired Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who had recused himself from the probe, replacing him with Matthew Whitaker, a Justice Department official who had criticized the investigation in the past. Concerns that Trump might use Whitaker to end the probe sparked protests in several U.S. cities. The Democrats vow to fight such attempts.
We will expose any involvement he has in it. He needs to know that if he takes any action to curb what Mr. Mueller does, we're going to find out about it. We're going to expose it. And I would certainly call on my colleagues right now to avoid the constitutional crisis. Take action now. Speak out against this appointment.
Even some Republicans acknowledge that confirming Whitaker as a permanent attorney general might be difficult.
He said some things that would probably be problematic to be confirmed. But having said that, I was very impressed with his attitude, his professionalism, and he's got a very solid resume.
Supporters say Whitaker is well qualified for the position and that ultimately it is the president's right to choose the head of the Justice Department. However, Republican senators also urged Trump Sunday to make his decision soon.
The president needs to determine who's going to be permanently at the Justice Department as soon as he can.
Trump says he will not interfere in Whitaker's job, even if Whitaker decides to curtail Mueller's probe. In a tweet Sunday, he lashed out angrily at California lawmaker Adam Schiff, misspelling his name to offend him, for noting that Whitaker is not approved by the Senate. So far, the probe has led to indictments of several of Trump's close campaign aides, but has not produced any evidence of Trump's collusion with Russia. Trump said he has answered the special counsel's questions in writing, but has no plans to agree to being questioned in person. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
It's the weekend, and whatever you're doing, you could use a little extra love. Music love, that is. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa, and I've got the perfect weekend show for you.
I just called to say I love you.
First, over 30 minutes of the continent's best pan-African music, commercial-free. Second, Song of the Week, Janjo by Daju. And then two exclusive interviews with artist Soul Prayer from Harare, Zimbabwe, and Free Boy from Kano, Nigeria.
Anywhere I go, I am the number one. It's your boy, Free Boy Sunny, DJ Blondo on the beat, Duma Records.
So lots of music love coming your way. Don't miss it. Music Time in Africa, this Sunday, 5 minutes past the hours of 15 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, most healthy children between the ages of 4 and 10 grow about 5 centimeters a year. So one family knew something was wrong when their son fit into the same clothes season after season. VOA's Carol Pearson reports doctors were able to get him growing once again after testing for a growth hormone.
All in on three. One, two, three, all in!
11-year-old Spencer Bayman is passionate about baseball.
My goal is to play college baseball.
There was only one problem. Spencer was the shortest player on his team.
I want to be as tall as these kids.
Go, Spencer!
Come on, Spencer!
Gradually, Spencer's parents suspected something was wrong.
It really set in 1 year coming out of winter into spring when he got out his cleats for spring baseball and he put them on, they fit. And they never should have fit. Those were from the spring prior.
Spencer's parents set up an appointment with Dr. Bert Bachrach, the chief of pediatric endocrinology at University of Missouri Healthcare. After careful testing, Dr. Bachrach determined a growth hormone deficiency was causing Spencer's growth failure.
Growth hormone just doesn't affect your growth. It affects your muscle mass and fat distribution. So that affects your cholesterol, that affects your overall, it also affects your overall sense of well-being.
Growth hormone insufficiency is a disorder involving the pituitary gland, which is a small, pea-sized gland located at the base of the brain. It is this gland that produces human growth hormone, among others.
Ready?
Yeah.
Since Spencer started getting a daily hormone injection 2 years ago, he has grown about 15 centimeters. Still, he has a reminder written in each of his baseball caps.
It says HDMH, which means height doesn't measure heart.
And heart is something Spencer has plenty of. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Your girl's happy to split your cut?
Split our cut? It's equal or nothing.
You vouch for her?
I don't require a vouch.
You really need another gun.
I got my own. You need to watch how you talk to me.
If you're in, we need to get you started right away.
Well, it didn't win at the weekend box office, but the movie Widows did come in fourth place and is getting rave reviews. Joining us now, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Jeff, I saw you post on social media that this could be the biggest movie of the year. That is saying a lot. Tell us all about it.
I did, and it's funny because they screened the movie when I was seeing another film at the same time. So sometimes, you know, they screen two movies in one night. I have to choose. But I wanted to go on my own to see this because it has the cast, dream cast, and also the director, Steve McQueen, is just absolutely phenomenal. 12 Years a Slave, he did. And I was just like, I got to see this movie. And it's a heist movie. You know, a police shootout leaves four thieves dead after an explosive armed robbery attempt in Chicago, and their widows have nothing in common except a debt left behind by their spouses. And all their spouses were a gang. They were criminals. But a lot of some of the wives knew what they did and some didn't. Like Viola Davis, she ran a long marriage without knowing what her husband did. Or maybe she did know, but she never said anything. So now they have to find out their future, right? So they join forces and they pull off a heist that her husband was planning. But it's much more than a heist movie. Each one of these women have a different background. They have different problems, different struggles. So it is a very empowering movie to see how the women have to come, they have to face their future like this. And it's so well done. It's very Hitchcock, the dialogue. And then you also have Brian Tree Henry, who's the gangster trying to get his money back from Viola Davis. He's trying to get a better life. He's trying to become an alderman. He's running for office. But also Colin Farrell is also running for it. And his dad has been the alderman for decades, played by Robert Duvall. So you have a political thriller. You have a heist movie going on. You have a drama, you know, with the women trying to figure out picking up their lives after their husbands all died brutally in a police ambush. And some of the wives have children. Some of them are totally clueless what their husbands did. They were beaten by some of them. This movie has so many layers. It's so complex. It's so satisfying. I couldn't believe how good it was. And performances, I can't even choose my favorite performance because this movie is star-studded and the screenplay sings. You know, I've been waiting to see that one movie where it just hits me in the head and I come out going, this is the movie to beat. And in my opinion, this is the movie to beat for me to be Best Picture for the year.
Wow, that's quite an endorsement. I don't hear you say that often. I guess I'm going to have to run out and see it. And we do have a lighter movie as well, an animated film, Ralph Breaks the Internet. How did he do that? Tell us about it.
Well, you know, this is a sequel to Wreck-It Ralph, Disney's huge hit with John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman doing the voices. Video Bad Game Ralph and his fellow misfit Vanellope must risk everything by traveling to the World Wide Web in search of a replacement part to save Penelope's video game, Sugar Rush. So they're way over their heads. So they rely on the citizens of the Internet, the Netsians, to help navigate their way, including, all your favorite social media sites from Facebook to YouTube. It's just so funny to see how clickbait is used in the movie and all these great characters come about. So you see these 80s video game characters in the modern internet, seeing these incredible games, and also the humor is really funny. Great special effects, great animation. This is a great Disney holiday treat, and again, I loved it. I had the best time.
Jeffrey K. Howard, you can find his full video reviews at vegasfilmcritic.com. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.